This is Colt Gennaro Chat, the only weekly English language podcast dedicated to Atletico Madrid and the official podcast of Into the Calderon, the SB Nation home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron. My guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat is Barca Blaugrana's writer Renato Gonçalves. Renato Gonçalves is the guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat. Renato flies again. This time we'll be discussing the international break, a topic Renato likes much more than I do, but we press ahead nonetheless with thoughts and analysis of Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, Spain, France, Slovenia, Montenegro. Not necessarily in that order, but we hit on all of those countries and their international teams. Mostly the latter, nonetheless. Of course, we have to find time to discuss the Partidazo taking place at the Wanda Metropolitano on Saturday between Atletico Madrid and Barcelona. It's been a great start to the season for Barca, but is this their first true test? And will Luis Suarez be healthy enough to play Saturday? Before we proceed, a bit of a disclaimer. My conversations with Renato are usually pretty wide-ranging in nature and do not center exclusively on Atletico content. If you're looking for more Atletico-centric episodes of this program, I will refer you to my conversations with Rob Walker, Into the Calderon staff writer here. He appears on this program every Monday, and a variety of other guests, including Carlo Valladares, had him on the podcast last week. He's an Atletico fan, tactics writer. He appears on this program every 2 or 3 weeks. But if you press ahead from this point, know that you will very much enjoy this episode, almost as much as we enjoyed making it. Finally, subscribe and listen to Colt Gennaro Chat on your favorite podcasting platform. That includes iTunes, where you should leave a rating and a review. It really helps the program out, really helps get more eyes and ears on it. In addition, Colt Gennaro Chat patrons get this episode a day early. They get early access because they have decided to contribute to Colt Gennaro Chat's Patreon page and help support the show. You can do the same. Head over to patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat to get a bunch of awesome benefits, including the aforementioned early access to select episodes of the podcast. Again, patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat. We'll be back with Renato Gonçalves after this.
What's up?
Well, that's good, man. How are you?
I'm very excited.
You are?
Yeah, a couple of reasons.
Okay, let's hear it.
Number one, Coach Anera check.
Yes.
That's always a reason to be excited. It's the highlight of my week. And we don't do this every week, but it's the highlight of my week anyway. And the second reason is my FIFA 18 copy finally arrived today.
Oh, yes.
And I'm waiting it to finish installing, so I'm very excited to play it, but I'm also very excited for a podcast, so you don't need to wrap this up early because I'm going to play video games. I can't wait.
As your enthusiasm is just so infectious, Renato. I love it so much. But yeah, I got my copy of 18 last week. Haven't played it a ton yet, but it's coming. I'm on fall break from school this week, so I'll be able to play it a little bit more.
I played a lot of the demo, but it's just not fun after the first day. The demo is just not fun anymore. You just want to get the full game.
Yeah, there's no customization, and the goalkeeping was broken, and there were like six teams to choose from. It was, and Barca weren't even in it, so you couldn't really play the whole. You still had City, but you didn't have Barca.
Yeah, it was just not fun to play. And it was so different from what the full game was. I heard from people who already played it because of the whole early access things. People were playing the full game, and they say it's so different from the demo, which isn't usual.
It is pretty different, like, okay. Yeah.
I couldn't wait, and I thought it was going. They said it was going to arrive on last Thursday. So you can imagine my anxiety.
Yeah, I bet.
Just arrived 15 minutes ago, and I'm installing it, and just very excited to play it finally, but also very excited about the Coach and Eric chat, so it's all good. It's all good today.
Well, that's good, man. That's awesome. Let's see what we got here. We do have some football stuff to talk about, mostly international stuff, which we don't normally debate too much on this program, but I think it's important for a couple of reasons. Number one, looking at the CONMEBOL table, it's quite interesting. I'm sure you can understand why I think it's so interesting. Seeing as
it's probably the best common ball qualification in recent memory.
Oh, it's amazing. And especially seeing as Argentina are currently in a position to not qualify for the World Cup. So I guess we can start there with CONMEBOL. Diego Godin, Jose Jimenez, and Uruguay are assured at least of the playoffs. They're not going to catch Brazil. No one's going to catch Brazil, but Uruguay currently in second after they drew with Venezuela. The goalless draw with Venezuela pretty much assuring qualification for them after they beat, especially after they beat Paraguay last month. It's gotten pretty easy for them. So we expect to see Godin back at the World Cup in Russia next year. But Renato, let's talk Argentina and just what on earth is going on there.
It's funny because for the long-time listeners of the Coach and Air Chat, they probably remember me talking in glowing terms of a certain Jorge Sampaoli.
Yes.
And wanting him to join Barcelona.
Mm-hmm. That was a phase you went through.
After careful examination of the Argentina games since Jorge Sampaoli took over, I have come to the conclusion that Jorge Sampaoli sucks as a coach. And I'm very glad that Ernesto Valverde is the Barcelona manager at the moment.
My goodness.
Because, seriously, man, I don't understand Sampaoli. I don't understand any of the decisions he's made. And against Peru on Thursday, it was probably the worst game he ever had as a coach. You draw 0-0 when you have Paulo Dybala and Mauro Icardi on bench, and you put two defensive midfielders on in the second half, and you rely on the top scorer from the Argentina League who never played for the national team before, in the biggest pressure situation that national team has had in quite a long time. And you literally do everything the other coaches have done, which is just ask Messi to do literally everything. That means you're not a good coach because you can't find a way to make the team make Messi more productive instead of the other way around. So they're in a mess. They'll probably qualify because their situation is not as dramatic as it could have been. Especially thanks to the Colombia loss to Paraguay. If Colombia won their game, it would have been much worse for Argentina. They're poor qualified, but they didn't have been in this position in the first place. And when Sampaoli took over, I was like, yeah, they're good because he is awesome. But he's not awesome, and they're not good, and that's a weird situation.
I seem to remember about 7-8 months ago, you were all aboard the Sampaoli to Barca train, and now look where we are.
Yeah, it's just insane. It doesn't make any sense. But I think that they never had a good coach. That's just the truth. I don't remember the last time Argentina had a good coach, and I was watching a Brazilian sports show this morning, a debate show, and they were discussing Messi versus Ronaldo, as always. It seems like people don't know what to talk about football, so they go to Messi versus Ronaldo. But it was an interesting debate. They were talking about how Ronaldo is more effective for Portugal than Messi is for Argentina, which I don't necessarily agree, because anyone who watched the game against Peru and thinks Messi isn't good for Argentina, I don't know what to tell you. But anyway, and one of the commentators, he said something pretty interesting. Portugal never had the most talented squad, but they always had good coaches. Mm-hmm. Argentina had always had a super talented squad and never had a good coach, and that nails it. That's perfect. Because Portugal, they have like a school of great coaches. Portugal coaches are some of the best in the world. And Argentina just don't have, apart from Simeone and Mauricio Pochettino, there are just not many good Argentinian coaches. And they never had a good coach in the national team. They actually thought that Diego Maradona was a good idea for a World Cup. That shows where they are.
Yeah, in the
and that was 7 years ago, and they still haven't found a good coach since.
Yeah, so. and that kind of segues into this point I kind of want to make about the whole argument about the legacy of Messi and Ronaldo and the institutional chaos in Argentina, whereas in Portugal you don't really have that. I mean, how much do you think this impact, as someone who's very plugged in to Barca, how much do you think Argentina's failures to dominate their opposition and do well in international tournaments, how much do you think it reflects on Messi, and how much do you think it impacts his legacy, frankly?
It doesn't help, certainly, because too many people to this day are still very caught up in the whole World Cup thing. If you don't win a World Cup, you're not a good player.
Right, which is not true.
Which doesn't make absolutely any sense, because how can you judge a player because of 7 games every 4 years? Is that really your standard for how good a player are? 7 games every 4 years? And again, the exceptional game Messi had on Thursday, people don't care about that because they didn't win the game. But it should have been 4-0 with 4 assists from Messi. He created 4 gigantic chances in that game. And if they win 4-0 with 4 of his assists, everybody's talking good about him again. So it's really just about results and a World Cup title, which doesn't really make any sense. I think the only thing I have to blame Messi, if I can say that, blame, was the Copa America in 2016 when he missed a crucial penalty. There's no arguing with that. His penalty miss was huge, but he also had a huge Copa America and carried Argentina to the final. 2014 World Cup, he wasn't the best player in the tournament, and he didn't deserve that award. And I think even he hated getting that golden ball because he knew he didn't deserve it. But he was a huge part of why they went to the final, along with Di Maria and Romero, the goalkeeper. So he just needs help, and he just needs a good coach to help him. And the Portugal comparison, Portugal don't have the same expectations as Argentina. They never had, and they never will. Even though they have Ronaldo, they basically have him and a few other good young players. That's always the Portugal story. Ronaldo and a few young players might turn into superstars in the future. That's always it. And Argentina is completely different. They're such a giant nation in footballing sense, and Messi is always compared to Maradona, who is one of the greatest players of all time, and who was probably the best player in the history of international football, if you consider what he did with Argentina. Not many players in the whole world did for the national teams what Maradona did, so it is a hard situation for Messi because of the pressure of the country he plays for and the comparisons he's forced to be put into. So it's harder for him than for Ronaldo.
Yeah,
and he has made his mistakes, but if he had a good coach for at least 2 or 3 years for his national team, he might have a title or two by now.
For a lot of football fans, I think it's weird to feel sympathetic for Messi and Ronaldo, and Portugal are in their own battle for qualification. I still think both will qualify. It's hard to imagine a World Cup without either one of those players, but you know, for some football fans, it's a bit of, you know, rooting on Argentina missing the World Cup or rooting on Portugal missing the World Cup, because it's just the weariness, the fatigue of the Messi-Ronaldo debate. Like, it's raged on for so long, and I kind of feel this way. I don't entirely feel this way, but I kind of feel like, you know, wouldn't it be fun to see a World Cup without either one of those guys? Like, wouldn't it just be so much fun? Like, because we finally get the focus away from those two and away from Messi needs to win a World Cup to secure his legacy that he really secured, like, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, as someone who isn't a fan of the big two in Spain, I think it would be pretty fun. But I know I'm definitely in the minority.
As a Brazilian, I'm telling you, I don't root for Argentinian World Cups. I'm Brazilian.
Yeah, you're Brazilian.
Not because Messi is Argentinian, I'm going to root for them. No, I'm not. I'm Brazilian. If it's Brazil-Argentina in the final, I want Messi to lose and cry.
Oh, yeah. Hell yes. That's what I like to hear.
So, yeah, I wouldn't mind either. As long as Brazil in it and with our favorites, which is the case now, I really don't care about anyone else.
Yeah.
My dream scenario for the World Cup is Brazil-Germany in the final, and we smashed them. Not 7-1, because that's never going to happen, ever. But, like, a really convincing 4-1
or
3-1 win.
You'll take, like, 4-0 or 3-0. You'll take something.
Yeah, but like really dominant. The way they dominated us, we dominate them. We won't score as many goals because that was a freakish thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I want a really convincing win in the final to settle the debate once and for all.
Yeah. I respect that. So
that's all I care about in the next World Cup. I honestly don't care about Messi and Ronaldo. And I couldn't care less about them.
Yeah, so
to be very honest,
I'm assuming you're pretty happy with how Brazil are doing.
Oh, I mean, Tite is God. I mean, that dude is insane, and you got Gabriel Jesus playing his playing out of his mind for the national team.
Yeah,
which is fun too.
That dude's good.
As a City fan, I'm very happy to see him do well. And yeah, it's been a long time since Brazilians have been excited about the national team, so it's pretty fun. It's been pretty fun. And like, we qualified for the World Cup in March. While everybody has been working hard, since March we're qualified. It's absolutely crazy.
And now they're just like padding the stats right now. They are 10 points clear of Uruguay in the CONMEBOL table. What are your feelings on Neymar these days? Obviously he left Barcelona under quite the, as we discussed a couple months ago, under quite the difficult circumstances, but still the hero in Brazil, for you at least?
No.
It's tough, isn't it?
It's very hard to call the guy a hero, but I realize he's a key piece of the World Cup. And the World Cup is such a crazy, huge event that clubs don't really matter when it comes to the World Cup. It's really about the countries. At least I look at it that way.
Mm.
So when the World Cup comes, I won't care. For that month, I won't care that Neymar left my team in the circumstances in which he left. I only care about Brazil and what Neymar can do to lead me to a sixth title as a nation. So that. I really love to separate international football from club football because I learned to enjoy both because a lot of club football fans hate the international break because they don't get to watch their clubs. And I was like, okay, yeah, you can look at it that way, but there are so many good stories in international football. If anyone watched the Egypt win on Sunday and wasn't excited, they shouldn't call themselves football fans.
That was awesome.
So I learned for the past few years, I've learned to separate international football from club football. I'm excited about international football, and it's especially now that my nation is doing well. I'm even happier.
Okay. Yeah. So this brings up a couple interesting points that I want to make. Number one is you bring up a really good point in that it is a struggle for a lot of fans to separate club versus country. Like, when the World Cup rolls around next year, like, I'm not going to care that... Well, I am going to care, but I'm not especially going to care that, you know, Sergio Ramos plays for Real Madrid, or Gerard Pique plays for Barcelona, or Isco plays for Real Madrid. They're all going to... Well, Pique's still in the team at that point, but I'm not going to care because you're all fighting for the same shirt in that case, and you're fighting for the same goal is to retain the World Cup. after the embarrassment of 2014. But you're right, a lot of fans do struggle to separate this, and a lot of fans, frankly, hate the international break. I do not care for the international break, but that is in part because they're so frequent. Because you have, you know, the first one comes, you know, 2 weeks after the season starts. The next one comes 8 weeks after the season starts. Then you have a month of play. Then you have another break. And then it goes for 4+ months uninterrupted. So, Renato, I'm going to give you a lot of power here. I'm going to make you an authority on international break scheduling. How would you fix it?
First of all, I'm very happy you didn't relate me to FIFA in any way. I'm very happy that you didn't call me a FIFA official or something, because that's not a title I want to have. But yes, if I was an authority, the thing I hate most is September break, October break, November break. That really sucks. I think you should have at most 3 breaks a year. The one in March, which I think is pretty good, because you'll have this 4 or 5 straight months of club football, and sometimes it's nice to have a break, you know, before the real end of the season comes, April and May, and you're really excited about that. So it's kind of nice to take a little break to prepare yourself, especially after so many matches your club plays in January, February, especially in Spain. So that one I'd keep. Middle of the year is obvious, because there's no club football in the middle of the year, so you have an international break for that, and then you have only one at the end of the year. I scrapped September and October, and only did November, and that's all. It's March, June, July. June or July, one of the two, and November. Instead of a 2-week break, and make it a 3-week break, and include an extra match, or two, so you can keep up the schedule for the qualifiers and things like that. So a 2-week break in March, a 3-week period in June or July, and a 3-week break in November.
I like where you're going with that. I would probably make it more toward the winter break, because, you know, teams get 2 weeks off for the winter break anyway. Why not? That's a perfect time for international matches. Like, why would you want to spend time with your family? Like, who cares about that? You know, it's a perfect time. Just thinking in a purely footballing sense, like a non-human sense. And then, yeah, March is a really good time for it as well. The summer months are a really good time for it. It's just to break it up the way it's currently divvied up, I think it's just nonsensical. Also, you got to get rid of friendlies. I think friendlies are pointless and they're dumb, and they're just more risk for injuries. They're like Marco Piazza for Juventus tore up his knee in a friendly last year. Like, that's what can happen.
Yeah, just do qualifiers.
Just do qualifiers. And UEFA is trying to, I guess, gut the friendly game, which is a pretty interesting idea. I think it's flawed, like just about everything UEFA does. It's flawed, but I think inherently it's a good logical idea. It's just not going to be executed well because it's UEFA.
Sure. But yeah, I think UEFA's idea is just to keep it competitive. Only competitive matches. It's just competitive all the time, which sounds like a plan, but like I said, it's not. The execution is probably going to be below par.
Oh yeah, it'll probably suck, but it's good to dream that it may not suck, and it could be kind of cool, and it gets rid of friendlies, which are just pointless. Just in like,
yeah, it depends on the friendlies though, because like I'll watch England Germany and England Brazil, which is coming up next month.
Yeah,
I'll watch those. It depends on the friendlies you make. If it's, I don't know, England versus Liechtenstein, I'm not gonna watch that. England, Germany, England, Brazil. I'm going to watch both of them for professional reasons, because I have to, but I also want to watch them. So there you go.
And yeah, I don't disagree with the point that everyone, you know, shouldn't be able to play friendly. Only the big teams can play friendlies. But those are the ones that should be hyped up, and they shouldn't be very often. And the focus should be solely on qualification, because it's only now, as we are reaching the middle of October, where the friendlies are going away. right? Like, it's only at this point where we're reaching, you know, we're getting close to the end of 2017 where the friendlies are now no longer a focus. It's just the qualifiers.
Though,
and it's too long. It takes too long to get to that point.
But 10 years from now, it's going to be a 48-team World Cup, and qualifiers will be pointless.
Yeah.
So maybe you don't need international football other than the World Cup, because who's going to watch a qualifier when everybody's qualified already?
I mean,
South America is going to have 6.5 spots. Everybody's qualified. Argentina won't be in trouble in a South American qualifier. I mean, if they keep Sampaoli, they might. But I mean, theoretically, Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Chile, Colombia—they're not going to have trouble with a 6.5 with 6.5 spots available, and only 10 teams in the qualifier. You know,
right. So,
it's international football. Like I said, I learned to appreciate it, but I do get a little irritated around September, October, November, because the season has just started, and there comes another break, and then another month, and it's really fun. Oh, another break, and then oh, another break, and maybe a player gets injured, and then it's not fun anymore. So I do get the point from both sides, but unfortunately, we don't have people in charge that are good enough to fix it, so it's going to be this way forever, I guess.
Probably, and we'll all just, you know, die sad, old, lonely deaths, and football will still be broken.
I like how our discussion about international football
really bleak.
took a dark turn.
It's really bleak.
That was lovely.
That was really very dark of me. Like, more so than usual. But let us move on to lighter things. Let's talk about the UEFA qualification, which is, you know, it is also a mess. Spain, well ahead of everyone in Group G. They beat Albania 3-0 last week. Plus 32 goal difference through 9 games. Pretty good. They're playing their final qualifier against Israel today. We're recording this on a Monday. What else we got? Yeah, so that's the big story for a lot of our listeners who, some of them are, there's probably some Atletico Spain overlap. In my case, there is. I'm sure in the minds of some other listeners, there are as well. France, big win over Bulgaria. Antoine Griezmann getting an assist. Nice little backheel flick to Just Blaise Matuidi. In Group B, Portugal, they are looking pretty good, although they're currently in second. They have a huge goal difference advantage because of their group, which has the Faroe Islands, Latvia, and Andorra in it. They have a plus 26 goal difference. They are far and away the best second place team, so they are assured of at least the playoff. Group C, no one cares about Group C. Group D, no one cares about Group D. Group E. Stefan Savage and Montenegro were eliminated from World Cup contention after they lost to Christian Eriksen and Denmark. Very sad for 21 Savage, who will not be representing his country at the World Cup next season. Group F. Oh, beautiful chaos in Group F. Another moment for you to slander Jan Oblak, Renato, as he let in Harry Kane's stoppage time winner to eliminate Slovenia from any hopes of qualification.
I mean, I don't even say anything.
You're not even going to say anything? I'm laying it on a platter for you.
No, it's not a penalty, so I won't make a joke.
I mean, he should have.
Although it was closer, than the penalty spot, and he still couldn't save it. So
yeah, he probably should have had this one. I mean, he just couldn't quite secure it. He just rolled right past his fingertips. It's just one of those where you go, ugh. I feel bad for him though.
It's Oblak, so.
So the best keeper in the world is not.
That's what he does.
The best keeper in the world is not going to be at the World Cup, Renato.
Who knows?
And that is Jan Oblak. He will not be at the World
Cup. Claudio Bravo may qualify tomorrow, so
just
a chance the best goalkeeper in the world will be in the World Cup.
The unfair unfairness of football that Claudio Bravo gets to be at the World Cup and Jan Oblak doesn't.
Though Chile faced Brazil, and Brazil probably going to win it.
Yeah, Brazil are going to get revenge on Chile, I think.
And if Chile lose and Argentina get a win, Chile is out, so that'd be fun.
Yeah, yes, it would. Beautiful chaos. Group H, Belgium have just dominated the competition because they're in a group with Estonia, Cyprus, and Gibraltar. Yannick Carrasco scored their winner against Bosnia, however, and that condemned Bosnia to elimination. Belgium have not lost.
Belgium had the easiest group of the qualifiers.
I mean, they really do. I mean, Greece is in second, and they're 9 points behind Belgium. They've only scored 13 goals in 9 games. Then you have the bottom three, Bosnia, who are usually pretty decent, but they won't be at the World Cup this time around. Estonia, Cyprus, and Gibraltar, who have lost all 9 games they played, with a goal difference of negative 40.
Gibraltar.
Just want to see Gibraltar, you know, get something here, get a point. They've got 3 goals. I just want them to get a point.
I got the solution for you. Ready for this?
Oh God, what is it?
A friendly with Argentina. Got it. It's not even if they'll score a goal. They'll probably win it 1-0 because Argentina can score. They have the second worst. The only attack that's worse than Argentina in the South America qualifiers is freaking Venezuela. Their best attacker is a guy from West Brom who scores four goals a season and is the top scorer of the team. That's Venezuela. Okay? And Argentina can only be better than them. So, I mean, you can't trust Argentina to do anything. It all comes back to how bad they are.
Now, if you wanted to get Liechtenstein a point, Liechtenstein, who would you put them against? Argentina again?
Yeah. It's like the gold standard for awful teams is Argentina. We have a saying here in Brazil that the shirt is worth a lot. So we talk about this all the time. There's a mystique about the shirt, how heavy a shirt is when the team is really huge and really traditional, and that's the case of Argentina. They're just going through because of the size of their shirt, how heavy their shirt is.
So, I like that. I like that saying. Just on the heaviness of the shirt.
That's basically it.
Then that might be the title of this episode, the heaviness of the shirt.
Yeah, I like this.
Baronato on the weight of the shirt.
Yeah.
It has a nice ring to it. Barca and Atletico this weekend, Renato, at the Wanda Metropolitano. It's going to be huge. It's a partidazzo. And, yeah, Barcelona top of the table.
It's a Tomas partidazzo.
Yes, Tomas partidazzo. Oh, speaking of Tomas, he got jobbed with Ghana during this round of qualifiers. They had a clear goal disallowed, and they're probably going to miss the World Cup now. So,
referee mistake in Africa? That's strange.
That's new and different.
A controversy in Africa about a referee? Come on! No! That's not true. Anyway, Barca Atletico.
Yeah, anyway, Atletico.
I don't want to get sued. Let's go.
Atletico are hosting Barca at the Wanda Metropolitano this weekend. That is two of the three unbeaten teams in La Liga going at it. Barcelona, of course, as you know, Renato, perfect to start the season with 7 wins from 7. I bet you didn't see this coming.
No. Though, this is without a doubt the first real test. We faced some good teams so far. I'm not going to lie. It's not like we beat nobody. Because once you're 7 games into a season, you've played someone good. It's not like we've only won the first 2 games and the lady is the third. If you win 7 games in a row, you're probably good because you've faced someone good. At least one. But we haven't faced a team of Atleti stature yet. We haven't faced Sevilla or Valencia. I'll discount El Clasico because El Clasico is its own
championship.
So
yeah, but Barca haven't played anyone in the top half yet. You've played 4 of the bottom 5 in La Liga. And everyone Barca's played has been, I think, 11th or worse. Not discounting the start because they've been in incredible form. But this is by far their biggest domestic test yet.
Yeah, without a doubt.
It's not close.
There's no arguing with that.
Yeah.
We're facing the second or third best team in Spain because you can't say I'm not entirely sure about Barca yet, even though we're perfect and we played really well against Juve and stuff like that. It's a huge game. It's a real test, and I wouldn't be surprised or angry if we lost, because it's this one that is going to test just how good Valverde really is. Because it's interesting that as much as Barca fans didn't like Luis Enrique towards the end, he had Cholo's number.
Yeah, he
Cholo
always
just
did.
Find a way to beat Luis Enrique.
Yeah, only beat him once.
Other than a quarterfinal, but
only beat him once, and it was a pretty important victory. If you're gonna win one game against Lucho, that's a pretty good one to win.
Yeah, but that was the only win.
Yeah, he never could figure out Luis Enrique, which was really weird. Because he kept getting closer and closer. Just couldn't beat him.
Lucho relied on his biggest stars to win the games. He actually did good things tactically.
Yeah.
It was interesting. Lucho's best games were against Cholo. It's very weird. He would struggle against the bottom teams, but against Cholo, he always rises his level in terms of tactics. I mean, he came out with a really weird formation the last time they played, the last game at the Calderon, that 3-3-1-3 formation.
Yeah.
Which completely threw Atleti out of the rhythm. Atleti had a good start, but then Barca just dominated the rest of the game and ended up winning.
The game should have ended. That game should have ended 1-1 before Messi scored that pinball of a goal in the final 5 minutes. I was so mad.
Yeah. And it's weird. The games have always been close, but Barca have always been the better team by far. It's
yeah,
really,
Simeone said it at the end of that Calderon game last year. He said Barcelona's quality and their decisiveness in tight spaces has just always been the deciding factor in these games. And he's right. I mean, obviously with Neymar gone and Dembele out, there's a little less talent here, but you know, you still have Messi. You still have Suarez. Suarez hasn't been in great form to start the season, but...
No, Suarez has been awful. Let's be honest.
He can get hot at any point. Yeah, how is Suarez doing? I read he might be looking at surgery.
Yeah, but it's a real fit? Simple surgery. He has a little problem in his knee.
And there's
the alternative of keep treating it, but it's going to take 4 months for the treatment to completely heal his knee, or just do the surgery, miss 2 weeks, and be completely healed after that.
So there's a chance he is out for this game Saturday.
That depends. He's going to return from Uruguay on Wednesday, and then he's going to meet with the doctors. He already knows the situation. The doctors had a preliminary talk with him, but they'll meet on Wednesday in Barcelona to basically give him the option. Okay, clearly the best thing for you is the surgery, because it's clearly affecting the knee, is clearly affecting the way you play, and that's why you're not playing well. But if you don't want to miss games, we can keep training you, giving you good treatment, but you always play in pain and maybe you're not going to be good. So you have the option, just do the surgery. You're going to miss 2 weeks, but you're going to be perfectly fine after that. So maybe that's the reason Suarez has been so awful this season. Maybe that's this little problem in his knee that he just cannot run properly, he just cannot shoot properly, and it's so easily fixable that maybe he'll just fix it. And I honestly take missing Luis Suarez against Atleti than having an awful Luis Suarez all season.
So, yeah.
Yes, there is a chance he misses the game.
You take the short-term bullet in exchange
for... It's really going to be his decision if he wants to play or not.
Yeah, I would take the short-term, especially considering he's playing Atleti this weekend. I would take the short-term fix and make sure he's out for the Atleti game.
And Suarez, doesn't matter his form, he always scores against Atleti.
What's really surprised you about Valverde so far? We can just talk about Messi's been amazing, and that's like at its very basic level why Barcelona have been so good to start the season. But what has surprised you? What's Valverde done really well so far?
Just how organized the team looks. You know, the team defends really well. All the players know their jobs, and he's moved Messi to a false nine position again.
And that's where he's thrived for so long under Pep.
Yeah. But there is a little problem, which is because Messi is the false nine, Suarez has to go wide. So that it's taking him a little bit of time to figure out how to put the two together, but he's clearly talented enough to figure out a way. Losing Dembele is a big deal because Barca had two exceptional games this season. Two. The derby against Espanyol and the game against Juventus. It was just exceptional performances from start to finish. And it's probably not a coincidence that Dembele was in both. And losing him forced Valverde to completely reshape everything he was thinking, because his system was very clearly designed to have Messi as a false nine, Dembele on the right, and then have Suarez come from left to center to join Messi and just wreak havoc on that middle. Now without Dembele, he's trying to find the winger, and Deulofeu is not really there yet. Dennis Suarez has been very good, so maybe he's the answer. He's tried Aleix Vidal too. So Valverde is really playing with his options in terms of who is replacing Dembele until January, which is when he returns. So it's not the ideal situation to go into the first big game of the season to not have a complete understanding of what's your best team yet, but that's the situation heading into Saturday, and just let's see how the team reacts.
It amazes me that Aleix Vidal is still finding ways, is still trying to contribute to Barca after all these injuries and all these false starts. It amazes me he's still a consideration. Like, it's impressive.
Yeah, I think Valverde is trying really hard, but I think he's figuring out that Aleix just doesn't work anymore. He took him out at halftime against Las Palmas, which was a clear indication that, yeah, you're just not good enough, and I finally understood that. And it sucks that the best spell of form Aleix Vidal ever had was ended because Teo Hernandez broke his ankle on a really unnecessary challenge. So I'll always be mad at Teo Hernandez because he took away the best Aleix Vidal we saw for Barca. So
Teo who? I've never heard of that person.
Yeah.
And I don't know who that guy is.
But the only problem I have with Valverde so far is just he doesn't play Nelson Semedo enough. Semedo has been sensational since joining.
He's played only like three times, I think. Yeah, just three games so far for him, which is weird.
Yeah. There's a pattern. He plays one game, and then he's out of the squad the next, and then he returns and starts the next game, and then he's out of the squad the next, and then returns and starts. It's this weird pattern. He doesn't get any continuity, and that's very strange. I don't know if Valverde is just trying to ease him into the team, but he's clearly already adapted. He's the best right back in the squad, without a doubt, by far. And I think Valverde just doesn't want to piss off anybody. And he really wants to show Sergio Roberto that he wants him in the squad, because there's a lot of rumors about the Premier League, Liverpool, Chelsea. The Chelsea rumor is really hot about they wanting Sergio Roberto. And Valverde is just giving him time at right back and in midfield to show, hey, you're important to me. But that is just taking time away from Semedo, who's clearly a very good player and just needs to play every game because he's young. He runs like a madman, can't stop running. He defends well, he attacks well. He's a sensational player and just needs to play.
I think another key to Barca's success is that Andre Gomes has played just 28 minutes this season.
Yeah, that's Valverde's best choice. Better than Messi, a false nine. Right. It's not playing Andre Gomes.
He's made three substitute appearances for less than 30 minutes.
Yeah, Lucho was in love with Andre Gomes last season, and it just didn't work.
No, yeah. It really
didn't. He's in the shopping list, and I hope he gets sold in January. So let's hope that happens.
Yeah, you are very much done with Andre Gomes. But yeah, Barca have been, especially in the last league match against Las Palmas, they were playing under pretty controversial circumstances with the Catalan independence referendum. It's still going to be a topic of discussion in the coming days, weeks, months, probably. It could even result, potentially, maybe, in Barcelona leaving La Liga. Is that correct?
Yes. If Catalonia doesn't unilateral independence, which means that they decided for themselves without recognition from the Spanish government, all Catalan teams will not be allowed to play in Spain. So Barça would leave La Liga. The natural option is Ligue 1.
Right.
Because it's close to France. The closest country to Catalonia, which would be pretty fun that we get to kick PSG's ass twice a week, twice a season instead of just once. I really love that because, like, Neymar, I can't wait to leave Barca. Oh, you coming here? Come on. I just left you. You're going to hump me here? That'd be fun. But there's a lot of talk because what league wouldn't want Barca to be in it? So there are other people talking about Premier League and Bundesliga, which is just crazy assumptions, but who knows? But if Barca do leave La Liga, there are two clear options. Number one, Ligue 1, which is very, very simple to do because it's just really close to France.
Yeah.
And the kickstart to the European Super League. Because if Barca don't
That's
have a
more
league,
likely
the other
me.
Clubs will go like, Barca will surely call Juventus and go like, hey, I don't have a league to play. You want to come and form one with me? Oh yeah, why not? Let's call Man United. Let's call Man City. Let's call Bayern Munich. Let's call Borussia Dortmund, and then you just do the Super League.
Yeah, that to me I think is more likely than Barca jumping ship and joining Ligue 1. Is that we've been talking about this potential Super League for just the super clubs for so long, and if Barca actually do get kicked out of La Liga, I don't think it's very likely that they do. I think that. This is, if they do get kicked out of La Liga, I think it's just a perfect impetus to call up these other teams, like you said, and just start this league that has been mooted for, God, almost a decade now. We're coming on about a decade where we've been talking about this.
Yeah, you need, for the Super League to happen, you really need a crazy circumstance. It's really hard for Juventus and Bayern, I think, especially Bayern, they have talked about it the hardest. They've defended it pretty hard. It'll be really hard to see Bayern going, see it Bundesliga without any kind of crazy circumstance. If a team is kicked out of a league like Barca can be, then it's a crazy circumstance and it leads to the Super League. I think it would really need something as crazy as Barca being kicked out of their league for it to happen.
I mean, stranger things have happened. It would be pretty fascinating, I suppose, to see it happen, but we'll see what happens in these talks between Madrid and Barcelona, between those, you know, the two governments, and it's something
you know what's fun?
We can keep an eye on.
You know what's fun about that? If Catalonia become independent, I am pretty sure Real Madrid will try to keep Barca in La Liga.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. 99% sure. Because they might be rivals, but Barca need Madrid, and Madrid need Barca. La Liga without them doesn't work. I know it's an Atleti podcast, and Atleti is a
I think it works. I think it works just fine without those two, but that's just me. Don't let my Atleti bias get in the way.
But, like, La Liga doesn't exist without one of them. So Madrid would try to keep Barca, and that would be pretty interesting.
I mean, in terms of global outreach and, like, marketing, yes, you need Madrid and Barcelona, both in La Liga. In terms of, like, enjoyment and in terms of, you know, more, not diehard, but in terms of enjoying the football and the rest of, and the other 18 teams, you know, I would not be opposed to Barcelona leaving La Liga. I'm not going to say El Clásico has ruined La Liga. Even though there is a chance, yes.
But, like, first, is talking about La Liga. I'm loving watching Valencia. They're so fun this season.
Yeah, they've gotten so good so fast, and I knew they'd be much better this season because they have an actual coach this time around. But yeah, this is already a team that 7 weeks in has one of the best counterattacks in the league.
And you know what's even more fun about Valencia is that they're just a slap in the face of those who say that 4-4-2 doesn't work in modern football.
Marcelino has run it to perfection. And you know, Simone Zaza is all of a sudden like unstoppable, which I don't know how this happened. Rodrigo has been in great form. Carlos Soler has been amazing. Like, they're getting great performances, like, up and down the squad. Their defense is really well organized, and they have a great counterattack. I mean, this is already a team that looks like a legit European contender.
Yeah, they're going to really be fighting. Good. And, like, back to the 4-4-2 thing, I'm reading a book about football, and there's a quote from Slaven Bilic, the West Ham coach, which is actually pretty bad, but he has an interesting quote, which is that the next revolution in football, the next tactical revolution, is that the formations won't matter. The formations won't exist. You won't call a team a 4-3-3 or 4-4-2. And I think we're already there. It doesn't matter that you think Valencia play a 4-4-2. They play well with it. So they find ways to counterattack well. They find ways to keep possession well when they have to. So it really doesn't matter what formation they play. They just have good players and a well coach. So formations come and go. 4-4-2, there was a time that 4-4-2 wasn't really a good formation, but now it is again. So that's why football's so fun. Formations don't matter. It's actually players and coaches.
Yeah, and you're a basketball fan, so you can also kind of relate this to positionless basketball and the small ball revolution in the NBA with teams like, you know, the Warriors kind of being the innovators of this, in a sense that small ball now rules in the NBA, and now we're seeing kind of, you know, as Slaven Bilic, I guess, intimates or claims, perhaps a move toward where formations don't matter and it becomes the individual becoming the end all be all, you know?
Yeah. So.
So it's good stuff. It's fascinating stuff, man.
Sevilla is also pretty good, but they're a different kind of good.
Sevilla are weird. They're weird. They're not playing well, but here they are in second.
Exactly.
You know?
Like, they're a totally different kind of good to Valencia. Valencia are good, are really good. Sevilla are strangely good.
Which is,
they're not really good, but they're winning all the games.
They're still winning, and they're doing. I think they have a couple challenges after the break, though. They go to San Mamés to start, then they go to Russia like 2 days after.
Yeah.
So that going to San Mamés and then going to Spartak will be a bit of a test for them. And so far, the only really good team they played is Atletico, and they didn't play very well against Atletico. Atletico beat them pretty easily.
Exactly.
But yeah, in Sevilla, La Liga's awesome. You know, this just basically La Liga's awesome.
Speaking of challenges this month, have you seen Barca's schedule this month?
I can't say I am an authority on that, but let me double check.
First, there's Atleti at the Wanda.
Yep.
Then San Mamés. Then there's a kind of easy game, and then there's Sevilla.
All right, so that's all in about 3 weeks. You're going to Atletico, to Athletic, then hosting Sevilla. That's difficult.
That's the month that will test us, really.
Yeah.
If we're still leaders with a pretty good advantage after October, then we're a good team.
But you're not getting too excited.
No, I'm not. I don't have any expectations, good or bad. So that's why I'm avoiding judging Valverde from the good or bad side right now. The team has looked pretty good, but it hasn't faced any real good team yet. But then again, I wasn't expecting anything good from Barca, so I'm just waiting for the tough test to come. But if we lose, I won't be surprised.
You know, that's the way to do it, is just not have any expectations so you can't be let down. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, but if it's Barca, you want to expect good, because that's what we've been having for the last decade. So it's not really good to have no expectations, because that means you're moving to the mediocre, and that's not really good. But
I don't know about that. Like, if you know, expecting, in my case with Atletico this season, it's a bit weird because they couldn't bring in new players. They're starting Luciano Vietto up top, which really is annoying me, as I've said on this program before. So I'm just kind of enjoying the ride until January, and if it goes well, if they surpass expectations and are in the title hunt, great. If they're not, I won't be too let down, and we'll basically have a brand new squad in January.
Yeah, but, okay, let me give you an example. If you were watching a Barca game in 2010, it was the Pep Guardiola team. What were you expecting out of any game?
I mean, out of any game, you expect like a 5-0 win. That's different.
A win and a spectacle, right?
Yes.
That's what we're used to. That's what Barca is used to
for
the last decade. So when you don't have that, it's kind of sad because that means you're not really that good anymore. So that's why, on one hand, it's good to not have any expectations, but on the other hand, that's a bad sign. So that's where I come from.
For Atletico, who are relatively new to this spot at the table, but have been here for a few years, but are still new to this spot at the table. You know, Simeone actually gave an interview to Spanish radio last week, and he said, you know, Atleti, the expectations have changed so much that we are disappointed with the goalless draw at Leganés. And I think he's right, because a few years ago, that would have been a great result. You know, a goalless draw and a point away and a clean sheet away. Now it's just, you didn't score, what gives? The changing expectations in football.
Yeah, and it's not just about the results when it comes to Barca fans. It's about performance.
It's about how you
look. You have to play well.
How you look. Yeah, and Atletico fans and observers and writers don't really care because we're used to watching Atletico not play great football but still grind out results.
95% of other clubs, and that's true especially in England, as someone who covers English football too, people in England don't give a damn about performance. They don't care if a team plays well or bad. They care about the result. And it's true for 95% of fans of any team. They don't really care if their team plays well or not. But Barca fans and people who cover Barca expect the team to play well because that's what the team has been doing for the last since Johan Cruyff took charge.
Well, this was a blast, as ever.
As always, man.
And so that is Renato Gonsalves. You can follow Renato at you're Renato DSG, right?
Still.
Yes. Yeah. Renato DSG. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Barron, JBBERN. Follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon. You can also follow Blaugranas Barca at Blaugranas Barca. Yes.
Yes. Exactly.
You can follow Barca Blaugranas at Blaugranas Barca. Okay, I got it mixed up, but I got it now.
Perfect.
We're good. Okay. Well, what was I going to say next? Facebook. Like Into the Calderon on Facebook at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. As far as Colchonero Chat is concerned, you can subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of Colchonero Chat on iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, and TuneIn. Please leave a rating and a review on iTunes if you have not done so. It helps the podcast's visibility, gets more eyes and ears on it. And in addition, Renato, Colchonero Chat has a Patreon page, and it is hopping.
Yes.
Yes. Patreon.com/Colchonero Chat. If you're interested in contributing to the show, you'll be entitled to some pretty cool benefits if you do. So head on over there if you want to support the show. Patreon.com/Colchonero Chat. We'll be back next week to discuss the outcome of Atletico Barcelona and get back into our normal rhythm. At least until the next international break. Until then, adios.